everybody, I'm Matt, and welcome to what would be considered the inaugural of 12 Ounces of Terror. I am joined, which I don't ask me how I landed this guy, but mastermind behind Graveshift Radio, former co-host of Rabbit and Red Radio, sometimes co-host on Know Your Horror Podcast, Mr. Ryan Lewis.
What up, man? It was easy. You said, we're going to be watching schlocky horror films and drinking beer. And I said, all right, I'm in, dude.
Wait. No. We are watching burlesque films from the 40s.
I think I read someone else's email.
Well, I mean, it's still cool that you showed up. I thought we were watching Scheherazade and 1001 Erotic Nights.
Well, fortunately for you, I watched them the other day. At least 10 minutes of it.
Oh, well, anything over 7 is bonus, right?
Right, 10's all you need.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That, and then you need a new washcloth.
Washcloth? Look at you doing his own laundry.
No, my wife still does it. Why is the washcloth crunchy? I have no idea.
Sorry, folks, I have a creaky chair. It's probably driving Ryan nuts by this
point. Yeah, you're going to change that by next episode, son. I don't think I could take it anymore.
What? Whatever do you mean? All right, enough of the intentional.
It sounds like you're in a car with the door open.
Maybe I am. It's a drive-in in my pants. I don't. Is that even a thing?
It is now.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
I want a t-shirt that says it's a drive-in in my pants.
Take her on home, boys.
Oh, well, why don't we, because this is fun and we're working out on how we're going to do this thing. Let's talk about, because this is 12 ounces of terror here. Let's, what do you have right now that is your beverage, man? What are you drinking?
I am currently drinking Founder Brewing of Grand Rapids, Michigan. Mm-hmm. Their Dirty Bastard Scotch Style Ale.
Oh, so good.
Oh, this is brilliant stuff.
So good.
Absolutely wonderful.
I celebrated my New Year's, I believe, with Founders, and I had a string of posts all over social media of all the different Founders brews I was having that evening. And I forget what is the alcohol content in that bad boy for the Dirty Bastard?
Let us find out if it is convenient. It is 8.5% by volume.
Right on.
So that is pretty close to 2 Bud Lights in a
bottle. Exactly. If you drink about 6 of those things, you're done. It's just, you're finished. You don't need to do anything else, and you can just sit back and touch yourself for the whole night. I didn't get a chance to hit the local craft brew spot, which was the plan for the day, but I am, at this point, 4 deep in Yinlings, and I have 2 more sitting next to me, so I'm good.
Yinling is a fantastic beer.
If I'm going to drink normal beer, it's Yinling.
Oh, is that your go-to?
Right, and if I'm in Jersey, it's Stella.
Ah, yeah, Stella Artois. Good stuff. Absolutely. I actually had a black and tan at a local brew pub with, I think it was Stella and Guinness. Together?
Right on.
Oh, phenomenal. Good stuff.
So basically, we're going to be doing a lot of drinking on this show.
Well, if this is any indication so far, then yes, I believe there will be alcoholism of some variety.
Right, so if you're looking for alcohol-induced humor and or conversations and debauchery, then this is the show for you.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it'd be, you know, something I'd listen to while I'm drinking. But, you know, it's not going to land on my listen list because, you know, I'm kind of making it. And I'll probably hear it 2 or 3 times probably before anyone else.
Right.
But, hey, that's kind of the way it goes, right? I mean, it's what we have to do. So, any interesting anecdotes? Any musings over horror cinema that you might want to share?
Well, this is something that happened last night, and I already mentioned it on Grave Shit, but it's going to be a few days before I edit that one up. Last night, and I'm just telling this to everybody because this deserves to be heard, I have the biggest scumbag fucking neighbors that ever existed on this earth. They sit outside just doing, you know, smoking the pot and just getting cocked with their kids running around inside, not watching them and shit. Well, one of these occasions that they apparently were having 45 people on my fucking porch, they decided to throw a half of a raw chicken in my recycling bin. Now, throughout the day, I'm noticing this fucked up smell, and it's that. And I look in there, and there's flies all over it and shit, and I'm pissed off at these assholes. They will not admit they did this, even though they had a fucking cookout. But they won't admit they threw the raw meat in my recycling bin. Okay, so I didn't want to touch it at this point, so I left it there. Oh, fire truck. Hold on a second. Right on. So, as we are recording, I hear something outside. Not like this fire truck, but I hear rustling around and everything else. So I went down the stairs, and I went outside, and I noticed the recycling bin was now tipped over. So I go around, and this thing is moving. The recycling bin is rocking back and forth, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? So I look in, and I'm like, okay, this is an animal. It's got to be. Maybe there's a skunk in there. It could be a raccoon. It was a raccoon, but it wasn't one raccoon. It was two raccoons fucking inside my recycling bin.
You see, I was almost, basically what I was thinking, replace raccoons with hobos. If it wasn't screwing, then it would have been like knife fighting over festering raw chicken.
Right, and that's what was happening. This chicken was completely gone. It was just little scraps on the ground, and this one raccoon was mounting the other and having a fucking ball in my recycling bin.
It could be the third date.
It very well could be. You know, third date, you gotta buy him dinner first.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's only not customary, just the right thing to do.
Like, officer, it is not rape. I got her some chicken first.
Yes, technically it came from a recycle bin, but I did wipe it off first.
I did shoo away the flies, thank you.
Is that not gallant? That anecdote was brought to you by Zingu Black Beer, imported from Brazil.
But other than that, that's all I got going on. So how about yourself?
Just living the dream. Well, you know, as currently it is the Saturday of Labor Day weekend. A little ways off from the Sunday, right? Am I getting my days right? It's Saturday.
It is Saturday, yes.
Yes, it is Saturday.
Yes.
I did do the family cookout get-together. Got to jam out some old country today on a 12-string. It was pretty fun.
Right on.
Some Johnny Cash. You know, I mean, at least you have Johnny Cash. Right, because right. I think it doesn't matter what you listen to, be it hip-hop, R&B, like doom metal, everybody can kind of, they all have a soft spot for Johnny Cash.
Yeah,
because
does.
He once shot a man in Reno just to watch him die.
Just to watch him die.
Well, I mean, especially for the metal crew, that's, it gets no better. Needless death for the sake of needless
right,
death.
He's the only person that, you know, I was about to say alive, but he's the only person at any point in time I would have been okay redoing a Nine Inch Nails song. And he did it, and I was fine with it, but anybody else I would have been screaming sacrilege.
Well, even Trent Reznor himself, he's just like, when I first heard that Johnny Cash was going to be redoing one of my songs, I was kind of weary of it. And then I heard it, and I'm like, wow, I must have actually written this song for Johnny Cash.
Right,
when he redid Hurt, you know? Which, brilliant, brilliant cover.
But I still say he should have said, I wear this crown of shit, you know?
Yeah.
Being the fact that it was Johnny Cage and how he usually went about things, I think it still would have
Johnny
been
Johnny Cage.
Did I say Johnny Cage?
Yes.
I was.
He is like split punching everyone in the nuts right now.
I'm telling you, dude, I was playing Mortal Kombat right before.
Oh, there you go. See, I actually was burning off some nervous energy after masturbation, with Resident Evil Revelations.
Mm, yes, yes.
Got to keep myself up to date with the video games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not as good as. I guess it'd be par for the course with a lot of the more contemporary installments of the franchise. Although there are some throwbacks to that game that are kind of nice. It's the way that it has like the journals that you pick up and actually have to read stuff.
Right.
Reading
right.
in a video game, I mean, really.
Right.
I mean, are we back in the 1990s? Jeez.
Do you still save on a typewriter?
I actually own two typewriters, but you don't save on a typewriter in the game. It just has a save feature at the end, or I think it does checkpoint saves as you go, but it's all broken up really nice, like, into episodes with chapters inside of them, so kind of like Alan Wake, if you've played that game at all, which one of the best horror games of the 360 PS3... Aside from Dead Space. But anyway, that could be a whole other podcast, me geeking it up about horror video games.
And I hear one's coming, man. Bo was telling me about there's a video game podcast. It's going to have actual video streaming and shit and everything else coming to the network itself, man.
Oh, really? Yeah, that's... with... You know, like Twitch TV being so accessible, you can actually, if you live stream video games from Twitch TV, you can export the live stream directly to YouTube, stream it all there. It's all kind of easy peasy, lemon squeezy. I don't know how Twitch TV, it's the big video game streaming service.
Mm-hmm.
They actually were just purchased by Amazon. Which, surprisingly, a large corporation bought this, and a lot of people are praising the fact that this happened. Just because Amazon's kind of a large company, but without putting itself in the big brother position that Google seems to have done
right.
in recent months.
Hmm.
Well, we'll see. I mean, it's video games are a battleground right now, so...
I've never been, you know, when I was a kid, I was the gamer, dude. Fucking, I was locked away in my room just playing games and going to the arcades and everything else, but I kind of fell out of it. At this point, I have found games over time that I still partake in all the time, and I don't tend to go out and get anything new. Like, the Transformers Fall of Cybertron fucking game.
Yeah. I've yet to play it, but it actually looks like a really interesting, fun game.
It's a fun fucking game, and, you know, if you're a Transformers geek like myself, it's fun. The Ghostbusters game for the PS3, I still crack that out every time I'm fucking drinking too much or just feel like being a Ghostbuster. And fucking Mortal Kombat games, that's it. And everything else, yeah.
See,
and Batman. Batman Arkham Asylum and Arkham City.
Oh, Arkham Asylum and Arkham... I did Let's Plays on YouTube for both of those games. Love them. I've yet to actually play the newest one, though, Arkham Origins.
I heard it was glitchy.
I've heard it's glitchy. I've heard that it has kind of a steep difficulty. You fight Deathstroke the Terminator early on in the game, and it's, from everything I've heard, a rather difficult fight.
Right.
So a lot of people tend to walk away from it for that. There's a new game coming out soon, Arkham Knight, something like that, possibly.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Which is supposed to, they're saying it's going to be a true open world, like GTA style Batman game.
But that's only going to be for like the new next gen systems.
Probably. Yeah, that's probably going to be the Xbone, the PS4. Yeah, that stuff. I've yet to upgrade. I'm in no particular rush. It doesn't seem like they're offering up a whole lot, other than Bethesda games. They made the Fallout titles, the Elder Scroll games. They do have a title coming out soon called The Evil Within, possibly. I don't know.
I think I heard of that one.
It's being helmed by Shinji Mikami, the guy who actually created the first Resident Evil.
Yeah, I saw a video on that. Yeah. It was like a trailer for it. Yeah, it looks fucking insane.
Yep, I'm looking forward to that. It's going to see a 360 release, so money kind of, you know, if finances find themselves in the right place, then, you know, I might be gassing about that on the show and causing you to roll your eyes and possibly strain them. But
that game right there will be like the one brand new fucking game I'll actually buy.
I don't know if you've played them at all, the Dead Space games. If you are if you're looking for some really good, like, modern kind of, not quite modern, last gen, I guess would be the actual term for it, horror games, they're good. I'm always the person to say PC gaming is totally where it's at, just for the fact that it's way easier to put on a pair of headphones and really do it right.
Oh, fuck that, dude.
Oh, yeah, turn the lights out, wear the headphones.
I haven't played a PC game since, goddammit, Alice.
Alice. Oh, yeah, fucking, absolutely.
That was the game, dude. I tore the fuck up on PC. But now, even that, when they did the second one, that Madness Returns, which I got that one, which is a fucking cool game, it came with a port of the original game right on the disc. So now I don't even have to fucking do that.
Oh, nice.
That just explains everything. I play old games.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with old games at all. One of the games on my PC that I consistently play is like old school. Holy cow, frog in the throat. XCOM, Terror from the Deep. I mean, this game came out in like 94, 93, something like that. But I will log hours and hours and hours in that game every day, just like I did when I was like 11 years old.
Right.
You know, the only time I'd get off the computer would be look at some Playboys and, you know, explore.
And now you don't even have to get off your computer. It's just boom.
I know.
Two clicks, you're at Pornhub.
Oh, yeah. You see, I'm more of a Beeg or XNXX. Personal preference.
Right.
You know, Beeg, no ads. Just give you the HD quality, you know.
Well, I just find Pornhub is easy to remember. It has porn in the title.
That is true. But, you know, if it's worth watching, it's worth bookmarking.
Right, very true.
You just gotta figure out how to hide it from the missus.
Hide it from the missus. I am honest with my whacking material. I'm extremely honest for it. And be like, oh, you don't want to fool around tonight? That's good. Pornhub is downstairs, and I'm going to find tattoo-pierced, big-breasted women that like to suck cock, and I'm going for it.
So there.
But that's just
Stop.
There's another crunchy fucking fucking washcloth for you.
And it all comes full circle.
There it is.
But I think that's probably a good enough spot to meander our way into our first break. And I think when we come back, we can talk about, how about the Lurking Fear? How do you feel about that?
That's cool.
Or we can go with the other.
Now, we'll do the Lurking Fear first, because that one's new to me.
That's true. And I'm actually really excited to hear what you have to say about that film. But anyway, we'll be back after, this short, you're tuned into 12 Ounces of Terror. We'll be right back.
the producers of Reanimator. And from beyond, take you to a town on the edge of madness. Where people have become prey for an evil under the ground.
These damn things have been living under our feet and tearing us apart for 20 years.
A lurking fear that hides an unholy fortune.
In that cemetery is buried a guy who is stuffed with money. This is your family legacy, kid.
No.
Don't even breathe.
Hey, I don't know what you people got going on here.
As soon as we blow the cemetery, you can walk away.
Criminals have come to dig for treasure.
Well, I'll make all of this very easy for you. I'm just here for the money.
In a cemetery of the damned. And hell has risen to hunt them.
It's starting.
Frenzy's John Finch. Blake Bailey. Hellraiser's Ashley Lawrence. Ghost Vincent Schiavelli. And Reanimator's Jeffrey Combs. In H.P. Lovecraft's The Lurking Fear.
And we are back and ready to talk The Lurking Fear. This is a 1994 full moon movie, which let's just get it out of the way now and saying it's a full moon, so it is what it is.
It certainly is.
Like it or hate it, it is a full moon movie. So shoestring budget, but they work it. I mean, full moon movies are all low budget, but very few of them actually feel cheap to me.
Right, right. One constant I've noticed in full moon movies, except for a select few, they always have these moments where, and this one is no exception, they have these moments where you think while you're watching it, they should have cut a little sooner. If you know what I'm talking about. It just goes into these moments where something happens, and then afterwards, it just goes on a couple
kind of
extra
mill around
beats
for a minute, and
that
like,
it shouldn't have been. Like, there's this one scene where Ashley Lawrence, she ends up, and I love her, and she ends up, she ends up shooting the dynamite, and the explosion goes off. You see the explosion go off, then out of nowhere, like 2 seconds later, it pans back to her, and then she does an obligatory roll.
Yeah.
And then after it shows a bunch of things exploding, it's just her standing up, and it's kind of like she's posing for a second, and then it just cuts real quick to something else.
Yeah, all right, so for the listeners, we'll do this all quick and dirty style. Our main character, one John Martense, is released from prison and is basically given privy to his family legacy, which comes in the form of a dead body that is stuffed with money, buried in a small town called Leffert's Corners. Fast forward to Leffert's Corners, we have Ashley Lawrence, possibly one of the best Lovecraftian actors, Jeffrey Combs, and some other fodder, in Leffert's Corners, preparing for a final duke out with the monsters living under the city and devouring the people who live therein. I think that pretty much sums it up, right? Oh, wait, and then there's a criminal element who also want the money and the dead body. and they show up.
There's a lot going on here, and
which this movie is actually pretty svelte. I mean, it's like 73 minutes long.
Right, it goes by in a clip like a motherfucker. I'm just gonna go on about right out the bat here and say I enjoyed this movie because I like a lot of schlock films. Okay, I'm and I use that term loosely because there is a lot of stuff going on in this film that I really enjoy. I like these creatures a lot, how they look.
I know. I thought they were really impressive looking for being a meager budgeted film.
Right, they don't have good mouth movement, but they are creepy looking. And it's not really, I don't know, maybe you could talk more about this, which will make me think, because you've obviously seen this more than the one time that I've seen this today.
But
their main goal, these creatures, is to get a baby to get your young to feed their young to instill the longevity of their race.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much what can be. I mean, I think that they're cannibalistic. I mean, we'll assume that they were initially human, the creatures, the Martens.
Right, because you find out that this main character that was released from prison, who is a Martens, has the same birthmark as these creatures.
Yeah.
But what I'm getting at is basically, why do you need a baby? Why can't you take a grown-up, which you've obviously taken several of them, and feed some of the grown-up to the children to instill the longevity of your family?
Well, that is a good question. I am in no way an expert. I would say, it's just, I guess it's like, you know, while children watch Dora the Explorer and grown-ups watch good stuff, I guess, you know, you let the kiddies play in the kiddie pool and you let the grown-ups do the keg stands.
Yeah, well, okay.
Because the baby's not going to fight back a whole lot.
So let's create a reason. Babies, their flesh is softer. It's easier for the babies of these creatures to eat.
Oh, yeah. I mean, last Thanksgiving, we had boiled... Yeah, I'm not even going to go in that analogy. That's just way off color. But I'm sure anybody hearing this knows where I'm going to go with that. Tender
and succulent. Small children. But where's John Rhodes when you need him?
All right, so... the question that, after coercing you through copious amounts of blackmail material, courtesy of a Facebook Messenger, what did you think of Jeffrey Combs in this film? This is actually my maniacal plan. I want to know what you think of Dr. Haggis in this film. Compare it to other Jeffrey Combs performances.
Jeffrey Combs, in my eyes, can do no wrong. He is literally and shit. Let's think about the things he's been in. One of my favorite actors.
Agreed. He has probably one of the best resumes in horror and science fiction.
Right, exactly. And in this film, I really see no difference in how I feel towards this man. He just brings something to a film. He's there, and his attitude, you know, is he's obviously a drunken doctor. And for some reason, this drunken doctor is with a team of people, we'll say, you know, hunter style that has it in them, led by Ashley Lawrence, to kill these underground fucking creature people.
And her sister and
the baby. And Jeffrey Combs, he just plays this wonderful, ill-equipped doctor that just can't stop drinking. And obviously has a thing for Miss Ashley Lawrence in the film, but she doesn't want anything to do with him because he's a drunkard. And he just brings Jeffrey Combs to it.
See, with this film, I mean, I'm not going to say it's my favorite Jeffrey Combs role, but there's just this, I mean, let's get it out, he's a twitchy, kind of, not sniveling, but he's, I don't know, he tends to have a role that he plays.
Right.
And I think in this film, he kind of steps out of it, and I think that it's reinforced by the fact that he's chain-smoking, he's drinking, and in this film, he almost serves as, like, a comic relief. Not quite, though, because, I mean, there's really not a whole lot of comedy in this film, but there's just an energy that I think he brings to this particular role that really sticks out. I mean, and there are really three roles for Jeffrey Combs, for me personally, that he just really just knocks it out of the park. And that's, of course, Herbert West.
Mm-hmm.
This role, and Dr. Vannicut in The House on Haunted Hill. Which he doesn't even speak. It's a purely physical, like, silent movie-esque role.
What about From Beyond?
I enjoyed the movie. I love Jeffrey Combs. It's just, those are the three roles in him that it's just, those are the three that it's just like, it kind of shows how dynamic he can be.
For me, it's Reanimator. From Beyond. And Castle Freak.
Oh, okay, yeah. Castle Freak is...
To literally see him as a grieving husband who at the same time is horny as fuck and wants to have relations with his wife, and she wants, you know, Barbara Crampton wants nothing to do with him because of the death of his son, and just seeing the inner turmoil in him, that's something you usually don't see out of Jeffrey Combs, so to me that performance just...
Yeah, it's always interesting to see kind of, how do I even put this? Where he's showing human emotion?
Mm-hmm.
Where, well, I mean, you have like...
When he's doing people stuff?
Yeah, when he's doing people stuff, like pooping. And like where he's eating a plum in that one movie. I was blown away, and I... can't figure out why the Academy ignored him.
And that's my thing.
Elitist bastards, every one of them.
There's something about Jeffrey Combs that I feel if he somehow looked different, I don't know, let's make him, like, change his form and make him leading man looking material in the eyes of society, let's say, I think he could have been, like, huge, honestly.
Yeah, but then we probably wouldn't be talking about him. Because
it's very true. Because I wouldn't
he would have
fuck.
Had a bit part in like Top Gun, and
right.
You know he would have fluffed Richard Gere somewhere,
like you do.
I mean it's a rite of passage in Hollywood. Those gerbils don't shave themselves. Oh,
But yeah, I love Jeffrey Combs. I love Jeffrey Combs, and in this film, obviously, no exception. And I think he plays his role well, and I like the character. Him and Ashley Lawrence steal the show for me, because God damn it, the main Martense guy from prison, he's god awful. He is
Blake,
a horrible actor.
Oh, Blake something. He was like kind of like in the Full Moon Stable.
Right.
For a minute or two. He was in that. He was in, like, Head of the Family, which I don't know.
Yes.
If
you, yeah. Yes, I own that film.
Yeah,
yes.
Me too. It's a full moon, so I can't really pass it up.
Right. I've seen so many fucking full moon movies.
Well, Charles Band has put his name on a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But and a lot of it good.
And I think a lot of it we're going to be doing on this show.
Oh, you know me well. Because, yeah, I do love some Full Moon. And some Trauma, so we can't...
Puppet Master and fucking Toxic Avenger are getting done.
Fuck yes. Oh, it is without a doubt going to happen. I went out and bought me some awesome Toxic Avenger shit.
right on it, because I could not get everyone to agree to do Puppet Master on fucking Grave Shift. That is so. It's happening.
That's
here.
Crazy. That how can that is like one of the largest franchises, at least in terms of number of films.
Right, right.
Elitist swine over a Grave Shift, Jesus.
Fuck you, sir. Okay.
No, it's nothing but love for you, Ryan. You are the man. And Vincent Paul, gotta say, Vincent Paul, you're awesome too.
So who is the blonde that's in this film? I didn't catch her name.
Blonde?
Yeah, I've seen her in other things. I can't picture it.
See, I am not entirely sure, mouse clicky noise. We're going to let the internet do this job for me. Yep.
God, you type so much faster than me.
I'm a geek, man. Comes to the
dude, I'm still...
Comes to the territory. You got to be pulling off the 360 drop shots and then talking smack to, like, 8-year-old Brazilian kids.
I'm still typing with two fingers and shit. I'm not ashamed.
Well, hey... Don't be. It's a real shame that it, you know.
Well, whatever
it can be picked up
is,
by this horrendous microphone.
Whatever this chick's name is, she's
Allison
stupid
Mackey.
Hot. Stupid hot. What
Her
else
name
has
is
she been?
Allison Mackey, and she was in. This is according to IMDb, mind you.
Mm, right.
Original Sin, Antonio Banderas, okay. Angelina Jolie. A lot of television. Law and Order. Law and Order rapey show.
Right, I could have seen her in there.
Let's see. The Stranger. She was on Frasier and ER. And Platypus Man.
Frasier, that's what I'm seeing her from. She hooked up with Niles at one point. That's what I seen her for. She ended up cheating on him with a guy that was just exactly like him. There you go. Frasier.
There you go. Frasier.
So not sorry for that diversion, people.
That is the educational bit of the series. We now conform to some government regulation.
Yes, yes.
Although we're drinking, vaping, smoking, swearing, talking about horrendous sexual acts. Everything that hopefully will be come to expected from 12 Ounces of Terror. Self-promoting asshole right over here.
Right on the first episode, no less.
What can I say? I have no shame. I'm sitting here in a diaper. I'm not too proud.
Right on.
Well, I figure at least at the end of this, if someone can listen to it and pretty much say, hey, I laughed, then my job is done.
I laughed. I don't feel so bad because I myself am in a diaper, and this guy, Matt, he's in a diaper, so thusly, I'm okay with myself. Yeah.
Yep, it's equal parts a horror talk, adult diaper support group.
Okay, so let's go into this a little bit. What do you think of this film? Let's go into some of the things about this film that, you know, just get your rocks off a little bit.
I mean, to me, this is a really, really good example of, like, a beer and peanuts kind of cinema, which you're going to get from a Full Moon movie. It's not a lofty script. There isn't a lot of metaphor you're going to find in it. I mean, this isn't a Christopher Nolan movie or Darren Aronofsky.
Right.
It's just a pretty well-established, straightforward 73-74-minute ride. You've got people who are where they are to do a specific thing, i.e. fight evil, flesh-eating, baby-eating people, things underneath the church. And if that's not enough, you've got a guy coming to get his $100,000 stuffed in a dead body and the criminals who want the money too. I mean, you know, this isn't lofty Academy Award winning fare, but it's a good ride. It's just, it's a fun movie.
Have you liked this film enough to go back and try to find... I don't know if we've mentioned this. This is a... This derives from a Lovecraft story, which I love Lovecraft, but I don't recall the story that this comes from.
I have not read the story. I have the complete Lovecraft on my phone. The book starts off with pretty much the big hitters, Colors Out of Space,
right?
You know, things like that, The Call of Cthulhu,
mm-hmm.
which is another film I would like to really cover, The Silent Call of Cthulhu 2005. Phenomenal film. It really
I have yet to see that.
In my opinion, and please don't let that sway you in any way. But the biggest complaint that I've read anywhere of reviews of this film is that it does not adhere to the Lovecraft story, like, at all. I imagine that it probably has some tenuous connection to the Martens family, possibly Lefferts something, Lefferts Abbey or whatever, you know, maybe not Lefferts Corner. But yeah, I guess the real connection is pretty much only in name. But in a lot of instances of Lovecraft, they don't translate well to film. I think it's really enough of a homage that at least they're going to put an H.P. Lovecraft's name on, or put H.P. Lovecraft's name on something. Because at least for guys like me, that's going to point me in the right direction. Because at least someone's going to, especially like Stuart Gordon, is going to maybe not be completely verbatim Lovecraft, but he's going to be trying to capture the spirit of it.
Yeah, he's still going to be true to it. Like, if you look at the story of Reanimator to Herbert West Reanimator, the meat and potatoes of what this story is the same. So it is what it is.
And in The Lurking Fear, in the spirit of Lovecraft, I don't think misses the mark that much. I mean, it's not a verbatim translation, but the idea of, you know, someone in the clergy who's actually kind of worshipping ultimately evil, or something that is just completely not understood by the layman, is something that it pretty much proliferates all of his work. I mean, Lovecraft is about, it's the horror of the realization that you are infinitely small in the grand scheme of things.
Right.
And that there are machinations in the universe that humanity just simply cannot comprehend or go insane. And, I mean, I don't see where this film really breaks that mold too much. It's just, you know, where else but maybe this little town in this universe are you going to find flesh-eating creatures that, who knows, maybe worship some elder god or something? I mean, you know, any movie is subject to interpretation. You kind of see what you want, you get what you want from the movies. And while I am the first person to say this is not a verbatim translation of any Lovecraft story that I've ever read, that is no reason to discriminate the movie or against the movie for what it is.
Right. I'm of course not going to do that because, this is one of the few Lovecraft type stories, especially a movie with Jeffrey Combs and Ashley Lawrence, that I have not seen until this point. And for me, that's a huge thing. So I know that I will be revisiting this film, and probably my fondness for it will grow even further because it's just that kind of cinema.
I'd like to actually, after a few watchings, maybe we could return to, you know, get an update from you, see where you're at on it. If you're feeling, you know, like you enjoy it more, enjoy it less, you know, start getting to that threshold where you're going to start poking holes through it or anything like that, you know. But, you know, it's something for the future. So
I like the idea, okay, there was one part in particular that I really enjoyed in this film. I like the fact that one of these creatures, these Martens, okay, people that live underground, comes up and starts talking to the priest, and the priest himself offers himself up as sacrifice if the other people will be saved. And this creature looks at him and says, "You called me Satan," and basically gets all pissed off and tears his heart out. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, you know, like, fuck you, I'm not Satan.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm a person, goddammit. I just live under the ground.
Well, you know, it's just one person's interpretation of reality. It's, you know, another Lovecraftian idea. You know, I mean, everybody interprets reality how they're going to, right or wrong. But that's right. Kind of metaphysical talk, and yeah. But, so, if you, instead of going through like an A through F scale or anything like that, I was thinking with this show, it'll just be a three tier. A recommend, a watchable, or an unwatchable film.
Right. This, I think, is probably one of my favorite recommend scales. I like this. As far as this movie, literally, I enjoyed it. You know, there's some parts of it I could pick apart at this point, but I could see what they were doing, and I could see basically the style of film they were making. I enjoyed Jeffrey Combs in this film a lot. Ashley Lawrence, I've got the softest of all soft spots for that woman, and it was good to see her being Linda Hamilton. And shit, the creatures looked cool, and the story itself, it was interesting. It was interesting enough to makes me want to revisit it. I would recommend this film, but at the same time, I'm not going to glowingly recommend this film. I think I will recommend this film to people that like low-budget, full-moon cinema. Because at a low-budget, full-moon cinema, this is pretty high up there in quality. I enjoy this one.
I'd actually have to agree with you on that. This is, I think, a really good example of how Full Moon tends to wring out every bit of work out of a dollar.
Right.
I'm not sure if this movie's budget even capped $1 million.
No, I doubt it.
But, it was filmed on the cheap in Romania and things like that. So, I mean, you know, they cut corners where they can. And they were probably filming, you know, like 8 Full Moon movies in Romania at the time. But I would also, I'll give it the tenuous beer and peanuts recommendation.
Right.
This is a movie you can grab up a sixer, you know, crack them and down them as you please. It's going to cost you an hour or less than an hour and 15 minutes of your life. I mean, you could do a lot worse for a movie to watch, in all sincerity.
Right on, there you go.
But I think it's probably a good enough spot to take our second break. What do you think, Ryan?
Yeah, worse for me. I got to take a piss.
Yep, I'm there too. We'll be back to talk about the 89 film, 88 film, I'm Madman.
And goddammit, I have a soft spot for this movie. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, all right. We'll be right back.
Warriors, torchbearers, come redeem our dreams. Shine a light upon this night, above the worldly fiends. Audience might be your guide, divulge it from the sea. Children
the shadow of an alley, watching and waiting for that special one. Soft as cloud and brilliant as sun, a flaming crimson torch of feathers, ready and ripe for easy picking.
It's this weird book that I picked up where I work. Somehow this character got out. One minute I was reading about him, and the next minute he was standing right next to me.
I know, it sounds crazy.
Damn right it sounds crazy.
If you don't believe me, you should just read the book. It's all right there.
I don't have to read the book. It isn't real.
But now, she's about to discover the shocking truth.
You published this book as nonfiction.
Malcolm insisted, claimed they were confessions. The guy was a lunatic. Claims the characters were talking back to him, refusing to do what he says. The monster from the first book, you know, the jackal boy, was hunting them down.
Now he's going to go around and take things from other people so he can, like, graft them onto his own face.
Now what we have to do is we have to figure out when this maniac is going to strike next.
There's a murder. It's about to happen.
That's it. Go.
Is it fact, fiction, or a nightmare escaped from between the pages of a hardcover?
Hardcover.
And we are back, and we are prepared to talk about, I really think, the centerpiece of tonight's show, I, Madman. 1989, some good slasher fantasy fare. I think
originally called Hardcover.
Ah, really? You see, I did not know that. See,
the original trailers that I saw for this film before I saw it, it was called Hardcover.
No shit. But we've got Jenny Wright, who you may have seen in the films Near Dark and Lawnmower Man. And she didn't really go too far after that, but very beautiful girl who did not the most talented.
No, not she's damn fine to look at.
But yeah, she is certainly something for the eyes. As well as Clayton Rohner, which, you know, nobody probably else knows. But
the boyfriend, he's from Just One of the Guys.
Yep, Just One of the Guys, and a USA series that I think ran one season called G versus E.
G versus Me, yeah.
Which was like kind of an entertaining series. I mean, there's an episode where him and his partner, who were both kind of time locked in the 70s as far as fashion goes, just get wasted and decide to, you know, knock down the door of a demon bar and go apeshit crazy. It's a fun show. It's right. Fun. Well, it was USA in like the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, but for me, Just One of the Guys, he was in the scene that had the formidable set of tits that completely changed my childhood.
So, that's a credential.
Right, absolutely. I love the man.
It is the hallmark of Ryan Lewis's formative years.
Right. Ryan's first hard-on involved this man in a room with a pair of titties.
And there you go. From the mouth of babes, as it were. But for those of you who are listening that aren't really familiar with the film I, Madman, I have took the liberty of basically going to IMDb and reading, you know, the synopsis of the film, which who knows what this is going to say. I'm just going to read it as I go. Virginia works in a used bookstore. She's really into horror novels and discovers a really good book. It's called I, Madman, and it's about an insane doctor who cuts off people's noses, ears, hair, and puts them on his face to please the girl he likes. Only Virginia discovers that the book is nonfiction, and every time she picks up the book to read it, she sees him. The insane doctor from the book has escaped the book into our reality.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, that was probably a little slightly John Rhodesy. My apologies to Mr. John Rhodes. I don't know him personally. I think it does okay to kind of sum up the movie, in broad strokes. But how about we start with what you think of the film, Ryan?
Oh, Jesus Christ. I don't remember what film it was particularly, but there was some film that I came across and saw this trailer, and it looked interesting as a motherfucker, and I had to see this film. At one point, it was called Hardcover, like I mentioned, and I looked around to try to find Hardcover for the longest fucking time, but it had that image of this guy with, you know, just these psycho eyes with a fucking scalpel and a mask over his face behind this girl reading a book, and I came across at a video store this film. And it was now I, Madman, which is a superior film, a superior title, absolutely. And I watched the thing, and number one, it wasn't what I expected, okay? It was a lot more, I'd say, low-budget feeling. But at the same time, dude, this film, there's something about it. It delves into the idea of an evil escaping a novel before, we'll say, Carpenter's In the Mouth of Madness, before he did it there. And it does it in a way that I find completely fucking interesting. We already mentioned that the girl in this thing, she's stupid hot in this, and in everything else I've seen her in, and it doesn't have any problem showcasing that. Her acting skills aren't the greatest thing, but there's something about the idea of this film. There's something about a killer. Okay, more than that synopsis mentioned, okay, this thing is, this guy, you find out the writer of this book, who also wrote another book.
Much of Madness, More of Evil, or something like that.
Yes. He had a thing for a girl, and she thought he was ugly, so he carved off parts of his own face, and carved off all these little things. So I don't know if he didn't like these parts, he thought these were the ugly parts or whatever. So he carved off these parts of him. He carved off his nose, he carved off his lips, his ears, and everything else. And then so now this other girl is reading this book, and it has brought him out of this story, which, because he was dead, because you find out he was schizophrenic and just crazy out of his gourd, and saying these stories were not fiction, they were reality, this was truth, and all that happy jazz. And so now he is going to people in her life and taking parts of their bodies to replace the ones that he cut off himself to please her, to make her want to be with him. And if she will not be with him, he'll just cut out her heart and wear it around his neck like Flava Flav.
It's an apt metaphor.
Right.
Flava Flav!
But it's done in such a way that I find it completely interesting. I like the fact that this girl, okay, that she is put in a position that she has looked to be fucking crazy pants. She's looked to be like she's out of her fucking mind to anyone that's listening to her story. Anyone that's listening to her saying, this guy is coming out of a book and he is killing people to replace parts of his face that he cut off because I read it in the book, and now he, every time I read him in the book, he appears in front of me. And anybody obviously would think that this bitch is out of her mind, but that's what's going on in this film. And it's done in such a way that I feel for this woman, even though she is a bad actress. And there's just something about this. But this movie, to me, is the pinnacle of an extremely well-made B film.
I can honestly agree with that. Jenny Wright, as you know, we are not mincing words here and saying she is not the most dynamic actress in the world, right. she does a well enough portrayal of the main character to carry the film. I mean, I think that should be addressed, because we're saying she can't act, and, you know, that's not necessarily wrong. But she serves the need. She does a very adequate job of being there. And you know, delivering lines. But I feel you are forgetting the linchpin of the entire film.
Do tell.
Jackal Boy,
yes.
it all comes back to the Jackal Boy.
Claymation at his finest.
That is almost like some new moon, or some full moon level.
Oh, it certainly
like
is.
Like effects work. And
it certainly is, but it's charming. It really is.
Oh, I agree. And this movie, I mean, it kind of moves on a few different wavelengths as you progress through the acts of the film. I mean, you kind of start out with like this whimsical, at times we'll say erotic kind of thing where you're establishing the main character and her boyfriend and some butt doing it and things like
yes that's what I mean. This is the first film I'd say in the horror genre that I remember at this earliest date and time that it had some chick getting fucked from behind, and you know, she was but it was done sensually. She was getting fucked from behind, but at the same time it was very loving.
Another positive that I will give this film, or a positive, I guess, since I haven't really listed one, is the fact, like, across the street, the woman lives across the street from this piano repair place.
Right.
And it kind of, like, the incidental music, the guy who works on the pianos or the security guard or whatever, plays every night. And it adds, that's the ambient music through the film. And I thought that was a really good, almost like a Carpenter-esque kind of touch.
Right. It was very smart.
For myself, like I said, the movie kind of, it goes through these waves of being like whimsical and erotic, and then you just go down like fucking Dark Avenue.
Mm.
And you start seeing all of like the actual murders happen. And one of the real benefits of this film is they're not really sparing you a whole lot. They're not cutting away where they need to and things like that, but they do it in a smart way. Like, when the doctor, Kessler, is getting ears for himself, I think it's done in a way that is very reminiscent of Alfred Hitchcock.
Right.
Where you're seeing it, but you're not seeing it.
Right.
It's, you know, it's given to you, but in a way that's very tasteful and kind of reminiscent, but there are a few instances in that film where I kind of get a Hitchcockian feel.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Like, during the first modern murder in the film with the staircase.
Yes.
That, to me, has a very Alfred Hitchcock feel to it, where it's just kind of this long downward angle where you can kind of see the motion, shadow versus light. Just a very good scene.
And that good scene leads into a very good scalping scene.
Very. Well done. And,
right, and you're not seeing any of the cuts per se, but you're seeing the blood flow. You're hearing the quiver in her voice as it's happening, you know, it's an unnerving sound.
Yeah,
that,
a visceral that, kind of.
Right,
it's
and
right
then,
there. You're hearing it. You're seeing it. You know.
Right, and you're seeing the blood. You're not seeing the cut, but you, goddamn, you're hearing that cut. And then he holds this scalp up like a,
yep,
you know, a victory,
yeah,
at the end.
Absolutely, it's done in a tasteful way, but there's absolutely no confusion as to what is going on. I mean, you see it happening, but it doesn't have to be Eli Roth in your face.
Right,
you know. I can't just say Eli Roth, Rob Zombie too, with, you know, House of a Thousand Corpses, Chris Hardwick, baby, you know, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah.
But it's the same gist. However, for as much as I enjoy this film, the ending like the very, very, very end ending. I just cannot get on board with it.
I like the very, very ending. It goes into very B-movie territory at the end, which, if you think about it, is unexpected, but at the same time, very interesting. Okay, you see what is it affectionately called? The beast thing? What is that called again?
The Jackal Boy?
The Jackal Boy.
I think in the Spirit of Club, in the first book that the main character reads, Virginia, she explains at one point to her boyfriend that this mad Dr. Kessler implants a hybrid jackal-human embryo
with his own DNA.
Yeah.
Right.
Which, yeah, kills the mother, and this Kessler ends up raising Jackal Boy as his son.
Right. And at the end of this movie, you have her full-fledged realizing, okay, number one, the first, we'll step back a second, I love the fact that after you find out the premise of this film and what's going on and the fact that she's reading these novels and he's coming out of this book to, you know, basically turn the stories into reality, at least affecting her reality. And the fact that it all takes place, the final showdown takes place in a bookstore. I dig that. Okay, you know, there's something very book-ending about that, which I dig. On top of that, she realizes what's going on, and she starts to read from the original novel. Not the Iron Man novel, but the Much of Madness.
More of Evil or...
More of something novel. Yeah. And she reads about the Jackal Boy, which makes him come forth. And the Jackal Boy attacks him. Okay, which I dig this attack. It looks fake. It looks bogus.
It's not a good effect. But if you can ride with it.
You can ride with it just as much as you can ride with RoboCop fighting Ed 209 in RoboCop.
Very true.
You know what I mean? If you could go and think of this as a midnight movie while you are watching it, you're golden. All right, and then you watch that, and then they end up having their fucking fight, and then he ends up hitting him with a fire extinguisher, which makes Jackal Boy smash through a glass window, and the glass falls down and cuts him in half. And then Jackal Boy leaps up and jumps down, running on its own hands because it doesn't have its lower body anymore, and then takes him, smashes through the fucking window, and you see nothing but book pages flying out into the wind. And it ends with the end.
You know what I mean? Yeah, and that's, I mean, while the ending does put a nice bow on it, that ending as it stands is, it's not enough for me personally.
Right.
Why is it that when this Virginia woman reads these books, she conjures reality? Why is it when they're both doomed to die, both Kessler and Jackal Boy, they no longer exist? I mean, is it... there's just too much metaphysics going on.
There is a lot of metaphysics
in that ending that it just goes completely unexplained, thus making it kind of batshit crazy by comparison to everything else, which in itself is okay. I am not the person to say, hey, this fucking movie got crazy and I hated it. Because that's not me at all. I tend to enjoy it when a movie can kind of start pushing a little bit against the threshold of what's accepted and what isn't.
I've watched this movie enough times that I start reading into things. I've seen this movie probably about, I'd say, half a dozen times or more. And I start to think about things. Okay, you start learning about this writer of this book, and it took place 30 years ago. And then you got this girl who this is happening to, and she's probably at this point late 20s.
Yeah.
We'll say that. So how I see it, and she's reading these stories, and as she's reading these stories, she is in the story. She sees herself as this character. So we'll say that this girl is, we'll say, the second coming, the reincarnation of this girl that he had a thing for. So why does she have this ability to do this? Why does she have the ability to make this reality? Because maybe it was predestined to be so. You know, once again, we're getting into metaphysics and we are getting into theory here. But I think is, you know, if you want to think of the...
Well, I think the ending of this film is very subject to interpretation.
Oh, certainly.
So, I mean, there's nothing wrong with conjecturing about, you know, I mean, and this is sound logic. I mean, it's making sense to me. And who's to say that reincarnation is not an established thing in this universe? They never say it isn't.
Right.
Therefore, the possibility is there. So, all right, I can get on board with that.
And call me crazy, I kind of believe in that.
You're crazy. So,
there you go, do what you gotta do.
Well, not for believing in reincarnation, but I'm sure there's something else that you are crazy for.
Right.
But I don't judge.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah. There's courts of law for that.
Right.
Which, are you driving home after the show?
I am home.
Thus ruining the gag. Well done, Ryan. Right, well done.
You know, I'm not gonna be one of those people that pretends my show is someplace else. No, this I'm in my computer room. And you are in your wherever.
Batcave.
There you go, in your car.
Ed, wouldn't you like to know? It's actually bathroom. I just have a creaky toilet.
Right, whatever works, man.
I've been white-knuckle death-riding something for the last 40 minutes or so. And I'm truly happy you brought that to light, because now I have to talk about pooping on air.
It happens.
So, is it not interesting that we are included on Legion?
I'm glad, and it has nothing to do with the fact that the person that runs Legion Podcast happens to be one of the co-hosts on my show.
Well, I was just going to say, because we're talking about me pooping, and that's got to make for very engaging topics.
Right, yeah, you'll fit right in on the network.
Well, thank you for saying so. You are an officer and a gentleman.
Oh, absolutely.
Shit. All right. So back to iMadman. Now, here a purely hypothetical question. If Ryan Lewis was behind the camera calling the shots for one scene in that film, what would you do differently?
One scene in particular. I'd say the doggy style scene. Yeah, the doggy style scene. I'd show full penetration. that would be my. I'd say literally, I'd probably work a bit on just some of the shots. I'd work a whole lot fucking better on that goddamn claymation for Jackal Boy. Number one. But all in all, I've come from the frame of mind that a film, no matter what it is, no matter its flaws or anything, they're a time capsule. It's even on films that if I remotely like a film and it has flaws, I accept the flaws for what they are and say this is limitations. I'm sure if I was in, you know, making this film myself and I had a budget larger than they had for this film, there's a lot of shit I'd do different. You know what I mean? There's a lot of camera angles to even lighting, even some of the lighting, which, you know, is a simplistic thought. I'd change things to make things a little more ominous. You know, I'd put the killer a little more in shadow. A lot of times, especially once he is out of his mask garb, and once he has the lips of her friend and he's walking around after her, I'd have that in shadow a lot more. Just because I think he looks a little more dopey once you could see his whole face.
You see, for me it's the nose. The lips are fine, but the nose, ugh.
Yeah, but I think what they were doing with that.
It really looks like they kind of like covered a pork rind cover up with a little bit of spirit gum, and they're just like, eh. All right, good enough.
Well, even with that, where were they going? They were going for these different parts of the body were taken at different times, so that nose is at a different level of decomposition than the lips.
Well, yeah, but it doesn't need to look like a overly fried Frito.
Right, which makes you think of the nose he took this off. This dude had an ugly-ass pug nose.
No, he had Mediterranean complexion.
Right.
With a Roman jawline. It is established in the film.
Oh, absolutely.
He'd have done better with the Cyrano nose. That would have been great.
Oh, certainly would. But, dude, even in this stuff that we were picking on here.
I know.
This film, dude, I love the killer's voice in this.
Yeah?
I dig it. He literally is intimidating. There's scenes in this thing where you just see him walking up a hallway with his hand up, holding his scalpel, and just walking towards her with these evil-looking eyes and just slowly walking in. That whole scene where he goes after the first girl and he shoots her up to put her to sleep.
Oh, yeah. And traveling through the apartment. And it's
and he's coming
like
in
a
he's
weird...
Like,
it's like slow motion, but it's not. And
right. And he says, count back from 50.
That's, yeah, okay. I should probably issue the addendum here. While me and Ryan are poking a little fun at this film, there are instances of genuine horror in this movie. And I think that of anything, that should be taken away from what we're saying here. Because we're having fun talking about, okay, well, Jenny Wright can't really act, and things are kind of whimsical when they shouldn't be, and the ending is kind of skeet. But this is a tried-and-true horror film.
Right.
And I think, just to cover bases, I wanted to get that out there. And we're saying this has legs.
Right, it really does. And I really think that a lot of people haven't even heard of this movie.
In all sincerity, I actually did not... I had no knowledge of this film up until the episode of Know Your Horror that you and I did together.
Right.
And we did the 89 film draft. And then the following day, I'm at FYE, and bam, there it is. I'm Madman 399.
Well, exactly. Score. Dude, I got my DVD for $4. Tell me this film is not worth $4.
Every cent and possibly a dollar more. I would go up to $4.99.
I would go even more.
I probably would too. If I had lost my copy today and down the road someone wanted $10 for a copy of it, maybe.
Absolutely buy it. I'd buy it. I literally
today. Oh, yeah, absolutely. At $10 price point, absolutely.
I ran around looking for this movie to watch for this show, and I ran around looking, and I couldn't find my DVD copy, and I was really pissed off. I said, "Oh, fucking, my Madman is gone," and as I was continuing to look, I was already on Amazon looking around for a copy of Madman so I could own it again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and it's, I mean, I'd have to, it'd be an internal debate for anything pretty much up to, like, $15 for this film. Just because I've seen it, but not seen it enough to really get everything out of it, I guess.
Right, I really think this is one of those films, if you revisit it a few more times, you're going to really see the charm in this film and see they were really trying something interesting.
Yep.
That you don't readily see in a lot of other horror films.
All right, so let's cut to the chase. Recommend, watchable, unwatchable.
I absolutely recommend this film. Matter of fact, I'm recommending this to more people. Okay, set your sights at a lower budget film and realize this is a film that was made for obviously a limited budget, and this was a filmmaker trying to do something that told a story. This wasn't just a slasher walking around cutting people up. No, this was a almost ethereal, in a way, supernatural, fucking unreality-based horror film that was telling something that was pretty fucking interesting. So, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, I recommend this movie.
I'm pretty much in the same boat. I recommend this film. Partially, talking about this movie, I don't think, no matter who we were, is going to do it proper justice without seeing the film. I think it has a lot of very strong points to it. Some weak points, but name a horror movie that doesn't have a weak point to it.
Right, and even their weak points in this are kind of strong.
Yeah, you can... Yeah, everything... I mean, the worst this movie can dish out is bearable.
Right.
I mean, and that even sounds a little more harsh than the movie deserves. But, yeah, I would honestly recommend this for anyone who's got, you know, 90 minutes, kind of wants to get out of the norm for a slasher film. Because the narrative approach of this film is certainly different than anything out at the time.
Right.
I mean, yeah, you can go up to, like, 96 and watch In the Mouth of Madness for something that is close. There are shared ideas, but they are in no way the same film.
Right. Right.
But, yeah, I mean, a good, strong, a solid recommend.
Right on. This is a I'm Madman-friendly podcast.
Yes. It has been agreed. I will Photoshop up the shit out of a seal for that. I won't, but it sounds good, right? Right?
Right, yeah. Right.
All
right,
so I think, well, that's I'm Madman. And I think we'll probably take one more break and put a big old gore-covered bow on this. What do you think?
It works for me, Zed.
All right, and we will be right back. You are tuned into 12 Ounces O' Terror.
Meet little Melvin. He's a 90-pound weakling. Everyone hated Melvin.
I'm gonna take this mop and shove it down your throat.
They teased him.
I'm gonna do it with you.
Okay.
They taunted him. They tormented him until he had a horrifying accident and fell into a vat of nuclear waste. Transforming little Melvin into a hideously deformed creature of superhuman size and strength. Melvin became the Toxic Avenger. The first superhero born out of nuclear waste. Yes, the muggers and the rapists didn't know what law and order was until the Toxic Avenger came to town.
Holy shit!
I don't know what it was, but it saved my life.
All right, everybody, drop your tacos or I'll blow your brains out.
The vandals and the perverts had their way with the little people of Tromaville until the Toxic Avenger ripped them apart. The Toxic Avenger. His face is so terrifying. We can't show it to you now. You'll have to see the movie for yourself. The Toxic Avenger can bend steel with his bare hands.
Oh, we're all a kid! Get it?
Leap small cars in a single bound. He crushes drug pushers. Smashes hit-and-run drivers. And gives all criminals their just desserts. The Toxic Avenger.
He was a hero.
He's a hero. He's a fighter. He's a lover.
Well, Melvin, you're beautiful.
The good citizens love him. The fat and corrupt hate him.
Kill that bastard for me. You gotta kill him.
Yeah.
Will he survive? For incredible explosive action, you must see the Toxic Avenger. He's a different kind of hero. Thank you. Toxic Avenger is coming to your town. Look out.
And we are back. Ryan has finished up doing his power yoga.
Yes.
Well, you know, you got to stay limber for this stuff. It's understandable.
It's tantric style, yes.
Oh, so you're going to get all, like, sting on it and just hold off your nutting for, like, 3 days and shit.
If I had the ability.
It's tantra. No, you need to finish, but it's tantra. I don't care. Pow! Punch to the eye. Oh, you fucked up my concentration.
I don't know about you, son, but it's the end of the show and I'm pretty drunk.
I don't know what you're talking about. I've been here sipping lemonade.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Smoking candied cigarettes that are no longer on the market.
Those things were great. You blew through them and then it would let out that little sugar powdered fucking thing that looked like smoke.
Fucking waste that sugar. Fuck you. That's my shit. But anyway, I think it's been, as far as inaugural episodes go, a show.
Yeah, I had a good time. That's all that matters, son.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I'm not gonna lie. I don't know if any listener is gonna think the same thing, but if any listener has made it to this point, gold star for you.
Right, indeed. And if you don't like the show, that's fine. We're still going to make it.
Yeah, chances are. So, we didn't, while we were at break, I never brought this up. What are you thinking we should do for the next show? I mean, we've got a plethora, nice word, of movies to go through. It's been mentioned, Troma.
It certainly has been.
There are some other ones. I mean, we can always keep it a surprise for the folks at home, or we can, you know, kind of dangle it in front of them a little bit.
Son, I don't see anybody anywhere ever touching Toxie. We got to hit some Toxie.
I'm entirely down with the Toxic Avenger in all of its glory. So, next episode, at least we can count on part one of our Toxic Avenger retro.
There you go, man. You choose the other movie, fucking Toxie, for the main feature.
But should I go good or should I go schlocky? Because should I offset or just kind of do what I want?
Do what you fucking want, son.
All right, then I'm going to say I'm going to go with the 2011 Kurt Angle masterpiece, River of Darkness.
Right on.
In several weeks, we don't have a schedule pinned down yet, and I don't think I'm really in a big hurry to do that, are you?
No, not really. Fucking, yeah.
But, you know, we're here on Legion. Thank you, Bo. Thank you, Ryan.
Right on.
But episode 2, the post-inaugural, I guess that'd be the State of the Union, possibly. Look forward to hearing about The Toxic Avenger and River of Darkness. With that out of the way, what do you have going on, Ryan? Anything noteworthy? Awesome? Less than awesome?
Just recorded a new episode of Grapeshift Radio that'll be dropping shortly enough. We are talking about Orca and Cannibal Holocaust.
Oh, that is so good.
Oh, first time I ever watched Cannibal Holocaust.
Oh, shit.
Jesus, man.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go too much into how I feel about that film.
I cannot wait.
Damn.
That is, yeah.
And after that drops, dude, we got the Phantasm retro coming. Because I want to do it before I hear other people start doing it. Not many people have done it.
And it's going to be picking up with 5 coming out here.
And 5's in the horizon. You know, who knows what could happen. It could hit right when we finish the 4th one. They'll say, oh, it's coming out this, and then we'll be able to just add it right on. Who the fuck knows?
That would be spectacularly pimp.
I'm telling you, son. And that's what I got going on. How about yourself, son?
About sums it up.
Right.
And there's the parents. I'm just going to keep doing what I do. Keep trucking on. Keep doing what I do. I'm going to be watching The Toxic Avenger and inflicting River of Darkness on you, which is its own small joy.
Oh, I forgot to mention, it hasn't dropped yet. There's going to be an episode of Two Drink Minima podcast, which is Gary from Cinema Beef's other, one of his other shows. We did a commentary track of Popeye the movie.
And what? You fucker.
Yeah, and all that is Williams, so... passing. And, you know, it's me, Gary, Gil from God damn it, man! Just so many people. Willis Wheeler was there. Fucking yeah, a bunch of people, and we all just got drunk and watched Popeye and shot the shit.
Goodness.
And that'll be dropping in a couple days.
Oh, that's yeah. It's oh, Popeye the movie, huh?
It'll be a good
that. That is so beyond awesome. I mean, it's doing proper respect to the legendary Robin Williams, which I had actually intended to have a moment of silence for him towards the not end of the show. Because, I mean, there aren't a whole lot of actors that have entertained the world as well as Mr. Robin Williams. And
no, certainly not. The world got a little less funny now.
Oh, absolutely. I guess on that dour note, I've been Matt Walsh, been joined by Ryan Lewis, which you are coming back. You don't have a choice. I'm sorry.
That's all right, man. I'll stick around.
I can ballpark where you live, and I'll knock on doors. I was a Boy Scout.
Right on.
You a podcast? You. Wait, you're not Ryan Lewis. How deep does your voice go?
Yeah, don't worry about it, son. I'll consider myself a regular on the show.
Well, yeah, consider yourself the co, my man.
There it is.
And there it is. You've gotten the job! The Rose! I don't know, what do they give on Next Top Model?
I found to watch that shit, son.
a handy? I don't know. I'm not giving you a handy. You can't
nice
hit me!
Handy, Jay, and a Baconator.
I will take the Baconator. That is sounding dead sexy.
Isn't it?
Well, you know, I was trying to harangue us around to have a nice moment of silence for Robin Williams.
No, let's
talking
okay
about Baconator handies.
Right. Robin Williams, if he was still alive, would probably want a Baconator handy. So that's quite all right. All right, Robin Williams is a man. He will be missed. Popeye commentary's coming up. And
all right, good night, everybody.
Take it easy.